Nice of you, John O'Dowd, to come into the Nolan studio this morning. You're obviously missing us.
I couldn't think of anything better to do on a bank holiday Monday morning than sitting there with yourself.
Let's get into this, John. Who do you want to win the general election, Jeremy Corbyn or Theresa May?
Gerry Adams.
Who do you want to win between Corbyn and May, though?
No, well, see, there's no difference to me in the sense that both of them are unionists. And they believe the continuation of the union. I believe that the Conservative Party has been a disaster for the North over this last 8 or 9 years. They've disengaged from the peace process. They have brought austerity measures in which are crippling our public services. If Jeremy Corbyn does win the election, I would hope that there's a change of economic policy from Britain and that we see investment in our public services. And I would hope, therefore, that even in terms of the Labour Party's stated position, that they would wish to remain or hold together the union, that would change, particularly in aspects to Ireland.
So you're seriously saying you don't care either way? You do not prefer your mate, Jeremy Corbyn?
Well, he's not my mate.
The man who stood side by side with Sinn Féin, didn't he, quite a few years?
In fairness to Jeremy Corbyn, he led where others followed. And he spoke to Sinn Féin, and he spoke to, and remember this, he spoke to Gerry Adams and Martin McGuinness when they were MPs. When the elected mandate, when the British government were barring both of those men from Britain, refusing to engage them in public, Jeremy Corbyn and others took a very brave decision that engagement was the way forward.
So why is he not your preference over Theresa May?
Well, if it's a choice between Theresa May and Jeremy Corbyn, I would prefer to see Labour. But I want to see a Labour Party.
So there is a preference?
Well, no, but I want to see a Labour Party that disengages from Ireland. I want to see a Labour Party that moves away from austerity policies, and I want to see a Labour Party that's engaged in the peace process. The Conservative Party hasn't been doing any of that for this last 6 or 7 years, for how many years they have been in power. But Stephen, I know where the question's leading to. I know what the question's about. It's an attempt to lump Jeremy Corbyn and Sinn Féin together, which I think is unfair, because Jeremy Corbyn led where others followed. I mean, Jeremy Corbyn was speaking to Sinn Féin MPs. British Prime Ministers were speaking to the IRA.
Do you think, Jeremy Corbyn, did you get any sense, do you have any knowledge that Jeremy Corbyn supported the IRA?
No.
Do you think he was against the IRA, do you?
But what period are we talking about? 20, 30 years ago, Stephen?
Correct.
What relevance has that got to do with today?
Well, it's got relevance because people often look upon someone and say, well, look, what have they stand for? What have they stood for all their life? Mm. Have they changed? And in order to decide whether he's changed or not, we've got to decide the baseline.
You see, when it was known that, say, for instance, Douglas Hurd, who was a very, very senior member of Margaret Thatcher's government, spoke to Danny Morrison and Gerry Adams in Belfast in the mid-70s, I didn't believe that Douglas Hurd supported the IRA. When the British government were negotiating with the IRA during the 1981 hunger strikes, I didn't believe the British government supported the IRA. When Jeremy Corbyn and other political figures realised the benefit of dialogue and spoke to Sinn Féin, I didn't believe then that they supported the IRA. I believe that Jeremy Corbyn and others recognised that the way out of conflict is dialogue. And he took very, very brave steps to speak to MPs, to speak to Sinn Féin MPs, members of Parliament who were elected by the people who had a mandate. And that's the only offence Jeremy Corbyn has committed. Whereas I say again, when Jeremy Corbyn was speaking in the open to Sinn Féin MPs, British Prime Ministers were negotiating with the IRA.
Let's talk about, you say members of Parliament, of course. So you've said this morning, John, that look, if it's a choice between Theresa May and Jeremy Corbyn, you would want Jeremy Corbyn essentially to be Prime Minister. Mm. You don't take your seats in Westminster. We're back to that again, aren't we? So you can't influence the outcome in any way.
Well, I've put this challenge out several times, and I've also put it out to particularly to the SDLP. Tell me what has been achieved by those who take their seats in Westminster from the North. In terms of, even we look at the Brexit debate, Theresa May's proposals in relation to Brexit have been passed through Parliament without any change to the proposals, because we see again that in terms of even the Labour Party, the Labour Party support Brexit. Now, let me be very clear, if the people of England and Wales wish to leave the European Union, I wish them well, because we need a stable island beside us, we need a stable economy beside us to trade with and to cooperate with. But there's been no change in that. There has been no dent made to the austerity policies of the Tory party over this last 6 or 7 years. And indeed, even, and Michelle O'Neill has used this example several times, and I think it's a very glaring example, none of our local MPs managed to stop the Tory party bringing in legislation, which means that a woman has to prove she is raped to claim child benefit for more than 2 children. So what has been achieved by taking your seats in Parliament?
Well, at least they're there.
At least they're
exercising their vote.
But Stephen,
you're not even turning up.
No, well, people are putting out a proposal.
And if it's close this time round, right? Your party could theoretically be the difference between Theresa May having a majority or not. And then you don't turn up.
This idea that they turn up, well, they don't on a significant number of occasions. Some of the MPs from here are abstentionists, not on a point of principle, but also at the point they just simply don't turn up for many of the votes. We have MPs whose voting record is in around 38%, some lower than that again. So they do abstain from attending Westminster. They just don't tell the public that they abstain from attending Westminster. The changes in our society, and if we reflect on the peace process, all those negotiations took place outside the Chamber of Westminster. If we look at even in terms of where the Brexit negotiations are going to be, the Brexit negotiations will take place in Brussels. The Brexit negotiations will take place in London, and they'll take place in Dublin. They won't take place on the floor of the House of Commons. What we are saying to people is give Sinn Féin a strong mandate at those negotiations and your voice will be heard.
Well, it's not just about Brexit, is it? Right throughout your manifesto, I can't read a page of you. I can hardly read a paragraph of your manifesto without you saying no to Tory cuts.
Mm-hmm.
How exactly are you going to stop Tory cuts?
We want to see a new relationship between these islands going forward. The ultimate way to stop Tory cuts is to allow the people of Ireland to govern themselves, for the reunification of the island of Ireland.
So your only solution to stopping Tory cuts...
I said it was the ultimate solution.
Let me
expand on the point.
But for those people who haven't sat up reading your manifesto, and there might be quite a few of them, the central theme, it's on every single page. No Brexit, no border, no Tory cuts. So setting aside your desire for a united Ireland, how are you going to stop Tory cuts?
Well, you haven't
a diddly squat hope of stopping the Tories, if they win, if they want to impose more cuts?
Well, let's explore that, right? We want to see a different relationship between these islands, but we also want to see increased powers for our executive. We want to see the transfer of fiscal powers to our executive to allow us to have greater control of tax varying powers. So we raise the taxes, and that in the sense of increasing taxes, but we are the people who gather those taxes, and we are the people who decide how those taxes are invested. But even with the limited powers you've seen, let me finish this point, even you've seen with the limited powers the executive have, we have mitigated against the worst aspects of the Tory cuts over this last number of years, but it's proving more and more difficult every year to do that. So there needs to be a change in the fiscal relationships between these islands. The executive has to be given more authority. We have to be given powers which allow us to raise the finances that are necessary to fund our public services.
Okay, so you want fiscal powers, in other words, tax-raising powers. What taxes would you put up to mitigate against the Tory cuts?
Well, it's interesting that, and understandably, when you talk about, and we talk about tax-varying powers, because it's the public, wants to hear tax-raising powers, almost think that you're losing tax to raise taxes. But I think the more important debate is what taxes are used for and how they're invested.
Right, so what taxes would you change?
Well, the taxes we want to see devolved is in terms of income tax. We want to see landfill tax and other taxes devolved to the society, so we can then to see what funds we can garner and then how we use those funds. And if...
So it's about garnering them.
If we then need to raise taxes, then we have that debate and then we move forward and we engage with the public.
There needs to be no debate. So let me set this out. Really, it's really simple, actually. You are saying that you want tax powers in order to mitigate against Tory cuts.
Yeah.
In other words, you would have to bring money in order to mitigate against the cuts, because you would be putting money in to mitigate against the cuts. That's really simple. In other words, you'd have to raise tax. You'd have to raise money. Where are you going to put taxes up?
Well, let's look at the income tax for a start. The executive was actually quite successful in job creation. during his last mandate, and foreign direct investment. So every job we created in this society, that individual paid income tax. That income tax left these shores. So every job we created, every additional tax that was raised left these shores. So let's see what taxes we can bring back from the Treasury in relation to income tax. And if we have to raise taxes in certain areas, then let's raise those taxes to invest in public services, such as our health service, such as our education, and such as other public services.
So tell people this morning which taxes you would put up.
But we're not in opposition yet to have that detailed discussion with the public.
You're not in opposition yet? You're not ready?
And when I say we...
When will you ever be ready?
No, when I say we, I'm talking about we as a political collective, because we require further information from the Treasury. We require further detailed information, which would allow an executive to make decisions around where our tax powers need to be either increased, decreased, and also, and this is the most important discussion about taxes, where they need to be invested.
So, in other words, despite it being the central theme of Sinn Féin's campaign and Tory cuts, it's certainly one of the central themes, you've no idea whether you're going to be able to do it or not. You haven't worked out what taxes you're going to put up. It's still all to be talked about. It's still all to be thought about. And you can't end Tory cuts without having done all of that work.
Well,
and Sinn Féin have not done the work.
Well, ending Tory cuts is the right slogan and mandate.
Oh, it's a slogan,
No. Well, let me finish my point. Slogan and mandate to go forward in an election, because Tory cuts are damaging our public services, they're damaging our health service, our education
service. You're giving people false hope, aren't you?
No, we're not.
Around a slogan.
No. What we're saying to people is that Tory cuts are a bad economic decision, austerity is bad for our society.
So spell out your plan.
And we have our spelled out my plan to you.
What, to think about what taxes you would put up to mitigate against
to have
a little conversation somewhere?
I haven't used that terminology. What I said was that as an executive, as a collective, that we require fiscal powers, right? We require to take control of our economy. We require fiscal powers to do that. We require further information from the Treasury in relation to what actual taxes and amount of taxes they're collecting from the society. We then, as an executive, have decisions to make as to if and where we require to raise income. I've used the example.
It's not if.
I have used the example.
Sorry, it couldn't be if. If you're going to end Tory cuts, that means you need extra money. That means you've got to put taxes up, doesn't it?
Well,
you confirm that taxes would go up under Sinn Féin?
I have used the example of the executive's success in increasing employment during the last mandate and foreign direct investment. Every job we create, that person pays income tax. That income tax leaves these shores and goes to the Treasury. We need all that information in front of us. Well, all that information is in front of us. We collectively as an executive then have decisions to make. That may include raising taxes to invest in public services.
But all I'm doing this morning is saying, where would you raise taxes? People are entitled to know. If you're taking money out of their pocket in some way, surely they're entitled to know where you're going to take it from.
Well, and before any decisions were announced around that, there would be a full public consultation in regards to that, and citizens would have their entitlement to say that, not only in terms of the public consultation, but no doubt the following executive or assembly elections that would follow any such transfer of power.
Would you rule out, for example, putting up income tax? If you have these powers, because you want them.
Again, the discussion about where we need to spend taxes is as important as to where we
come
raise
on, John,
taxes.
Surely you've had that discussion within Sinn Féin.
We've had many a discussion about within Sinn Féin.
Right, so would you rule out putting up income tax?
I wouldn't rule out putting up income tax, but I would want to see, first of all, where that income tax would be spent. Would it be spent in our public health services? Would it be spent in our education services? What benefits that would bring to our local community as adverse to people losing tax from their wages?
And would you rule out putting up income tax across the board, or would it only be for the highest earners? Has that conversation happened?
Well, I think in terms of our society and how our workforce is taxed, it's quite clear that those on lower incomes are adversely taxed by the current regime. So those who are on higher incomes, I think it's only right and proper that they pay a higher rate of income tax.
So do you mean the middle earners or just those at the very top?
Well, Stephen, again, we would need to establish the exact income tax revenue which would be transferred from the Treasury, and then we would make those decisions.
So that's not thought through either?
Well, it's not a case of being not thought through, Stephen. If you do not have all the information that we require, and it has been proven very, very difficult over a number of years getting accurate information out of the Treasury, because even when we discuss the All-Ireland debate, it's quite difficult to get accurate and up-to-date information out of the Treasury in relation to how much taxes leave these shores.
Would you rule out putting up rates?
Well, rates is a power the executive already have.
Yes.
And the executive has kept rates within line with inflation over the last number of years. Martin O'Muller published quite a wide spread or a document which covered rates in quite an extensive way just before the executive collapsed, which looked at a variety of ways which we could increase our income from the rates, which would have been fair and equitable across the board.
So you would put up rates?
Not for the general populace, but there was areas within our rates, current rates policy, which would allow for a greater rates intake, which then could be invested in public services.
Let's look at a border poll. The manifesto says Sinn Féin believes there should be a referendum vote on Irish unity within the next 5 years.
That's correct, yes.
I'm pretty sure Michelle O'Neill back in March called for a border poll as soon as possible. So mm-hmm. You're backtracking from that.
No, it's
within 5 years.
Well, we would prefer that as soon as possible within those 5 years, but we're setting out a time frame which we believe it is perfectly reasonable for a unity referendum to take place.
So not within a year or two, 5 years is your goal now?
No, it says within 5 years.
Yeah.
So that could be within the next 6 months, the next year, the next 2 years, or any time within the next 5 years.
How would it work? You get a referendum. Mm. It dominates politics for months and months, and everything else gets pushed to the side. If you lose that, when would you want the next one?
Well, I think you'll find, Stephen, that partition has dominated our politics for this last 90 years. The constitutional question dominates politics within this society and has done so over this last 9 decades. So this idea that calling for a unity referendum and having a unity referendum is destabilising, I don't accept. We believe this is the answer to the instability this society has suffered for many, many years. It's a democratic way forward. Citizens will have their say. There will be a debate about all these issues. And one of the things, even going back to the last debate, during the Scottish referendum, the Scottish referendum opened up the Treasury's books in terms of what exactly was going in and out of the Scottish economy. And I think that'll be an important part of a unity referendum debate going forward, which will allow us to see exactly what taxes are leaving and going back and forth from these shores.
But if you get what you want, a referendum vote on Irish unity, mm-hmm. and say you didn't get the result you wanted, would you accept that that's it for 7 years?
We accepted the terms of the Good Friday Agreement. We will continue to work towards Irish unity. If we lose the unity referendum debate, we will continue to work towards Irish unity.
So it's possible. Mm. Well, in fact, it is an accurate statement from me that within your manifesto, the possible promise that you're making your electorate is, well, say you have the border poll in year five of your 5-year window and you lost it. Mm. That means not another border poll for another 12 years from now.
So,
here we are today. You're only promising that you want a border poll within the next 5 years. Yeah. So if you had it in year five and lost it, there's not going to be another one for 7 years after that. You're talking 12 years down the line until you would have, from now, until you would have a second run at that.
Well, that's the
12
worst
years.
I'm glad you're concerned about our electorate and their concerns about a border poll, but that's the worst case scenario. As I said to you earlier in this interview, it's within the next 5 years. It may be 5 years, but it's up to those who believe in Irish unity as the best way forward to work towards achieving, firstly, the right to hold that unity referendum and then to win the unity referendum. So any of your listeners out there who believe that Irish unity is the way forward, I would encourage them to work towards it.
But you accept that if you lose one, it's 7 years to the next one?
That's the terms and conditions of the Good Friday Agreement.
It's a long time to wait, isn't it?
Well, we've had partition for 9 decades, and it has, in my opinion, proven to be a complete and utter failure. If we have to work the democratic process for 12 years, as you put it, then we're prepared to do so.
How affordable would a United Ireland be? Spell out your understanding.
Well, again, and there's been a number of different economic reports in this regard. A recent report by an economist, Hubner, has said that a united Ireland is not only economically viable, but also would be economically beneficial to the entire island of Ireland. And we can look at figures in different ways in regards the impact of partition on the economy in the entire island of Ireland.
Let's start off with a baseline. What is Sinn Féin's assessment of the subvention Northern Ireland gets from London?
Good question. There's a number of different elements of looking at that there.
What's your understanding of the public figure?
The public figure that we're often told, and you often quoted in this show, is around £10 billion subvention.
Do you accept that?
Do I accept that the actual £10 million is all comes here? No, I don't accept it.
So what's your assessment?
Our assessment is that it could be as low as £2 to £3 billion. And when you look at the different elements...
It's still quite a lot, isn't it?
It is quite a lot. But Stephen, the question you have, you can't simply look at...
So how are you making that up?
No, you can't simply look at economics in terms of a mathematical equation. The question you have to ask yourself is this: what impact does partition have on the economy across the island of Ireland? That's the question that has to be asked. Is partition economically damaging to the island of Ireland? Does the separation of public services and a back-to-back public administration, what's the cost of that in regards an economy? And in terms of what then potential of moving forward does an all-Ireland economy have going into the future? And Professor Huebner, or the economist Huebner, suggests that £2 billion can not only be achieved, but you can move beyond in terms of a positive revenue in multiple billions. So economic arguments will continue as part of the unity referendum.
But the economic argument is fundamental to your proposition.
It is, yes. We're not avoiding it.
You don't know what the figure is of how much we need to make up if we had a united Ireland.
Stephen, I've already given you a figure.
No, you've guessed one.
No, I haven't guessed one. We have already, when we have published papers on this in regards to subvention, how much of that subvention actually comes onto the island of Ireland.
And you don't know.
How much of that subvention is used for other purposes which remain in Britain. But it's not a guessing game. I won't accept that. It's a guessing game.
You won't accept it. So you're saying the accurate figure, we're getting £3 billion of subvention from London. That's accurate, is it?
I go back to...
Is it accurate?
It's as good a guesstimate as anyone else.
So it is a guess.
No, but hold on.
It is a guess.
Hold on. It goes back to our discussion earlier on in terms of taxation policies here. We cannot get accurate information out of the Treasury in relation to the economic and taxation policies here. And as I said in relation to the Scottish referendum, what the Scottish referendum did was opened up the Treasury's books.
So when Marcin O'Muller was Finance Minister, he didn't do an assessment of his own?
No.
What
Marcin O'Muller tried to achieve...
Why not?
No, hold on. What Marcin O'Muller tried to achieve was accurate information from the Treasury. That was, to the date Martin left office, that was not successful. Now, was Marcin going to continue that programme of work? Yes, he was. Were we going to continue to evaluate the costings around Irish unity? We will continue to do that. Will we continue to study Professor Huebner's report and other reports in regards to this matter? Yes, we will.
So, in summary, some people say the subvention, the amount of extra money that we get, the net extra that we get from London, some people say it's £10 billion. Mm-hmm. You say your guesstimate is £3 billion. And you want people to support your theory of a united Ireland and support your promise to end the Tory cuts based on a guesstimate of how much money we would have to find from the magic money tree in order for this country to work.
Well,
£3 billion at least. Billion.
Well, Stephen, can I say across an all-Ireland economy, £3 billion is not a significant figure. Your listeners will, of course, look at £3 billion as a significant amount of money. In terms of an economy across the island of Ireland, it's not a significant amount of money. And as I've said to you previously, there are economic reports that show an all-Ireland economy, in the absence of partition, would actually increase our GDP into the billions of pounds moving forward. So there is...
How come?
Well, let's look at in terms of partition. Partition has had a detrimental impact on the island of Ireland. We are now running public services back to back. We have the potential, as a result of Brexit, of having an economic border across the island of Ireland with new tariffs and taxation being placed on...
We're talking about here now. Brexit hasn't happened yet.
But you have to take it into your calculation, Stephen.
Well, I'm trying to give you the chance to calculate the now rather than the future. Well, you can't even do that.
Well, I can. I'm giving you...
Guesstimate.
Your guesstimate, £10 billion, can you stand over the £10 billion figure?
That's the Department of Finance.
But the Department of Finance figures... No, it's not the Department of Finance figures as such. It's what the NAO and others tell us what the subvention is here. It doesn't take into account the measures which are calculated as part of overall UK costs. So there's a significant proportion of that money will be used for instance, defence. Will be used for, to a lesser degree, the upkeep of palaces. Will be used for other measures, customs, and all those sorts of things that are centralised costs, which in terms of the spreadsheet are accounted for the north. So all those costs. So you're working on guesstimates as much as I'm working on a guesstimate. But our guesstimate
is... The only difference is I don't want to be, nor am I in government. You, if you got your way, would be running the country.
No, but hold on. We may be running the country in a united Ireland, or we may not be. There will be democratic elections to any reunified government. Sinn Féin may prove to be the most popular party across the island of Ireland. We are currently, across the island of Ireland, the third largest party, but we may not be in government.
Do you not think, John, that you would have a much more compelling argument to people about whether they wanted to support your goal for united Ireland relatively quickly? If you were able to sit here today and say, look, we have employed some of the best minds that we could find in Europe or the world or wherever, and they have come up with a realistic figure as to what the subvention is and how we would support it, and we've published detailed plans on our website around the finances of that. In contrary to that, what you're actually doing is saying, well, we've guessed a figure and we'll work it out in the future.
No, well, I don't accept your analysis of my answers. We have looked at the current subvention. We have published figures in relation to the current subvention and how that is broken down, so that has been achieved. We have
Where are those figures?
They'll be available on the Sinn Féin website, or we can submit them to your office. Okay.
They're on the website now, are they? People can find them?
To one of your numerous team members here. We can submit them to them.